I'm Alex Rodriguez.
And I'm Jason Kelly.
From Bloomberg, this is The Deal. Each week, you'll hear us in conversation with business icons.
This show will explore deal-making across sports, media, and entertainment.
That is a harsh lesson in business.
Sports is not as simple as bringing a bunch of big names together.
I didn't want to do another stomp you out speech.
It opened up so many more doors.
The show is called The Deal.
Listen to The Deal.
Listen to The Deal on Spotify.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Think you know the Brooks Ghost? Think again. Introducing the all-new, better-than-ever Ghost 16. Now with nitrogen-infused cushioning for lightweight, supreme softness that feels good every step, every street, every single day. So go ahead, take your daily joyride in the all-new nitrogen-infused Ghost 16. It'll turn your everyday miles into everyday endorphins. Let's run there. Head to brooksrunning.com to learn more.
All right, back with another episode of the Causeway Street Podcast. I am Josue Pavone. Joel Pavone's here. Sean Dutra. The Boston Celtics have the best record in the NBA. They're on a 7-game winning streak, and they're not showing any signs of slowing down right now, man. This winning streak could go longer than expected. Sean, before you even start, we will look ahead and see just how difficult this schedule looks for the Celtics. And, of course, we'll take our trip around the NBA with Joel, in case you missed it, but... Man, in case you missed it, Monday night at TD Garden, what a win. That's my favorite win of the season. I know it's early. I know there's plenty of basketball left, but that was my favorite win of the season. Just showing how to dominate a team when it matters the most. Yeah, you put yourself in a bad spot, but they knew exactly how to get themselves out of it. And it wasn't just Tatum and Brown. It was a team effort, and it was Marcus Smart at the end. Clutch Marcus Smart. Man. All these Smart haters or people who are questioning him and wondering if he's going to take him to another level. Like, I hope all of that is out of your system at this point, because you could have came heavy with that noise last year, mid-season, towards the end, going into the playoffs, whatever. Pick your spot. That's fine. But now, at this point, turnovers are down. He's not jacking up threes. He's stacking up assists. He either scored or assists. Out of what, the last 19 points of that fourth quarter, you know, when you needed it the most, right? Whether it was going on that run that the Celtics needed offensively or coming up with the big stuff on the other end, man, it was Marcus Smart, but he wasn't the only one. Man, this team is looking good right now. Like, this is it. This is the one, man. This might be the one. This might be the team right now.
Yeah, easily, man. I mean, you think about what, like, the two different Celtics teams we've seen. Like, to start the season, there was a lot of that Brogdon love, and I was a big fan of Brogdon in the first couple, you know, 10, whatever, games of the season. But since he's been out, you're right, Smart has sort of not only stepped into what he did last year, but has upped his game to the point of where this is like the perfect Marcus Smart. This is what we've all been waiting for Marcus Smart, and what I've seen in him for a while, but it's just the level-headedness and composure that he's showing is absolutely remarkable. And I think that's a huge reason why they won. And then I know we want to talk probably a lot about the Thunder game because it was a full team effort, but you know, that Pistons game on the back-to-back after a big Nuggets win, and Tatum single-handedly took over that game, played like
a
whole game.
It was shorthanded, too.
Shorthanded, no Jaylen Brown, no Al Horford, no Brogdon. Tatum basically took that game and said, no, I'm not losing to the Pistons. Like, that's the type of mentality we've seen where you've seen in spurts, but I think you've seen all year this year. So, yeah. I 100% agree. First off, kudos to me for calling a 4-0 stint here. Last look at
that. Yeah, you got that. You got that.
Secondly, Jason Tatum, I think, definitely has put himself as the most consistent best player in the NBA from this start to the season. I know Joel Embiid put up that 60-point fucking behemoth thing he did the other night.
Behemoth.
Yeah, but I mean, you're talking about.
I feel like that kind of flew under the radar. But yeah, you're right. Yeah. I mean, I'm not trying to knock him. I'm not trying to downgrade it. But I feel like it's just. People kind of slept on that one.
Like, yeah, over 100 points in two games and like back to back games. Yeah. Yeah, player of the week, but it was just like, it's all right.
Right, like if you didn't like dig deep, you might have missed it. Like you might have missed it. Like it wasn't like it wasn't all over like the way it should have been. It should have been all over.
If you watched what's the name of that show back in the day on Saturday mornings. Inside Stuff. You watch Inside Stuff,
yeah,
and you were like, whoa, when the fuck did this happen? Like with the Joel Embiid going off.
Well, I don't know. I mean,
I just feel like it should have been highlights like flooding my timeline. It just wasn't like that. Didn't play out that way.
Embiid has had a season where he's been booed by the Philly fans more than he's been cheered. He's had a bad start to the season, and now he's sort of coming into turn. But
well, the team in general.
Yeah, I want to talk about the Philly. I just want to bring it up and be like, I think when you're talking about the most consistent best player in the league, we went through our MVP rankings last week, and I think they've dramatically changed in 1 week. But I think right
Which
now,
which is why you don't do freaking MVP. But
but at the same time, why Jason Tatum?
When you only had a couple slices of pizza, you know.
Hey,
by the way, people were loving that analogy.
One slice. One slice of pizza.
The analogy was, had the people going there. It was good job.
Good. There we go. God,
you only had one slice of this regular season.
You know? One slice. Everybody knows the rules, you know.
But the first couple bites of the second slice have been amazing, guys. I mean, you know that this is a top pizza here. But
you know, speaking of real quick before we keep it going here, because it's usually what we don't do on Causeway Street.
Yeah, slow it down.
Are there really people out there who are going first bite on the slice? Right, everyone knows where the first bite goes, and then going straight cross after that. Is that a thing? Because like, I know someone who says that they do that all the time. Their second bite is, or second or third around there, is to go for the crust. Me, I'm not even touching that crust until I'm done with the pizza. Like that's the last part of the slang. I guess I'm old school or something.
No, you're 100% right. Anybody that does that is doing it for show, not for pizza eating, right?
Okay, all right.
But I do.
I'm only buying. If there's people that were doing that before Portnoy, okay, I'll buy it. No, but if people are just now doing it, it's because of Portnoy.
The only time you'd ever do it before Portnoy is when the stuffed crust was raging and you'd want to eat the whole crust first thing, right? That whole thing.
Yeah. Right? Well, back in the day, people used to say, you're supposed to start from the other side, like the commercial. Yeah. Like, all
right. Which has always been dumb. Then, like, where are you going to go from there? How are you going to hold the pizza? Idiot. You didn't think that?
two straight episodes of Pizza Talk. I gotta love it. You know?
But I will say.
Yeah, you just took me back to elementary school, man. Stuffed crust.
I will say, though, there is something about when you get a good slice of pizza, which you know it's like a nice crispy crust. You know, sometimes you'll, like, eat it down to the crust. Maybe you don't eat it down to the crust, and you leave, like, a little bit of that cheese on there.
Oh, yeah, I've done that. If I'm really loving the crust, I'll do that. Yeah.
You just flip it side a little bit, and then you got, like, a cheesy breadstick situation. Man, it's pretty good. But anyways, let's talk Celtics, bro. Joel. Ball pass it to you, man. I'm talking.
You got a cheesy bread situation.
All right. Aside for Tatum, you know, going on a tear to start the season, I do like Grant Williams being in the starting lineup and Derek White coming off the bench. I feel like he's more comfortable in his role coming off the bench, more so than we saw at the end of last season going into the playoffs, because he's been hitting his shots. Like he might not take a that many shots throughout the game, but like he's hitting them when they matter most, right? And without Brogdon, White and like a combination of Sam Hauser and there's always this third player. We know that Jason Tatum and Brown are going to do their thing on a nightly basis, right? But there's always a third player that ends up having a crazy night. Or 20 plus points night. You know, it was Al Horford for one game during the week. Sam Hauser, Grant Whitten, like the difference that you've seen this year in terms of like Marcus Smart doing his thing as a legit point guard is that he has all these weapons and he trusts all of them. That's that attributes to the depth, obviously on this team. But
that's the biggest thing. Yeah. When we look at this team from different, and we're going to sound like broken records because not a lot of bad stuff to talk about, but the difference between this team.
It's worth mentioning them.
The difference between this team and last year's team is how much depth you have. Even when you are down three starters, you can plug in guys and know you're going to get enough. And Peyton Pritchard, like.
Yeah, that's another guy. I was trying to think. I was like, who's this another guy? Yeah. Peyton Pritchard, like being ready to come in and make a difference, make an impact. Shit, you know, even the few minutes that Blake Griffin has played, he like here and there starting when Horford was out, like you can pick anybody here in terms of like, you know, the role players or the bench guys, and they're going to make an impact at some point in the game. And for the most part, it's been when they needed the most, like in a tight fourth quarter or, you know, making a comeback like they did against, you know, the young OKC Thunder here who, you know, they look like they were going to run away with that for a second, but they showed their age at the end of the game. And that's a tribute to the Celtics and their experience. A year ago, they probably would have lost that game, but, you know, here we are. And they're on a mission to do what they were trying to do last year. And the whole MVP talk with Tatum's like, yeah, I want to win that one day. But like right now, like I want to win a championship. So if I got to play at an MVP level to get there, that's what I'm going to do. That's where he's at.
Yeah, that's what he's been doing. And this reached a point where you can call him the best player in the NBA right now. Like, and people will be like, all right, I respect that, which was obviously wasn't the case last year.
I'm Alex Rodriguez.
And I'm Jason Kelly.
From Bloomberg, this is The Deal. Each week, you'll hear us in conversation with business icons.
This show will explore deal-making across sports, media, and entertainment.
That is a harsh lesson in business.
Sports is not as simple as bringing a bunch of big names together.
I didn't want to do another stomp you out speech.
It opened up so many more doors.
The show is called The Deal.
Listen to The Deal.
Listen to The Deal on Spotify.
Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
We expected him to reach another notch, but this level that Tatum's at right now and the consistency we're seeing out of him on both ends of the floor, the effort that we're seeing out of him on both ends of the floor is just carrying this team. And look, coming into this game, you know, the Oklahoma City Thunder game, the reason why I thought that this would be a game that they would lose, because when we were doing our look ahead last week, is because of the offensive power that they have. And we saw that, right? And I knew the Celtics would have a hard time slowing that down because I'm just not seeing the discipline on the defensive end of the floor. But when it came down to it, was it muscle memory? Was it just being experienced, you know, losing so many games, lopsided game, or not even lopsided game, but coming up short so many times last year? Maybe that helped, but they just snapped into it in that second half. And it was later in the third quarter, but it took, you know, stops from Peyton Pritchard, and it took, you know, a quick scoring run to sort of even out the deficit, which was, felt like it was in double digits or around it for a while. Something was just kind of hanging around after that 8-0 run that they just never recovered from the 8-0 Thunder run. And Shea Gilgeous-Alexander was just toying with Jaylen Brown at some point. So it was just kind of like, man, where is this game going to go? But again, it was the discipline on the defensive end that put together those stops. And then the way this offense is flowing, they can just put up points in a hurry. And Joel, like you said, like the confidence that these guys have, or Tatum has, and or Marcus has, whether it's Tatum, Marcus, whoever is has the ball in their hands, they trust it. And guys know where they're supposed to be. And Joe Mazzulla made so much of an emphasis on executing, and how much that was something that he's been that he was worried about throughout the preseason, and that he knew something that they had to work on. And now it's just like, man, this offense is looking like the type of Celtics offense that I haven't seen since Rondo was running it. You know what I mean? Like, that's how good this offense has been. And it's also one of those offenses that, again, they're not just relying on Tatum and Brown. Maybe it looks like that on paper, but you go out, you go through these last four or five games, these last four or five Celtics games, and each one tells a different story. You know, like that's how good this offense has been.
Yeah, no, I think the OKC game, if I'm not mistaken, was the one game that they've played so far where they were down double digits pretty much for like most of the game, almost the entire game. They were playing from behind, and they were still able to pull off the win at the end, right? Because we've seen them blow out teams from, you know, wire to wire. We've seen them, you know, close games when the whole game is, you know, back and forth. But I think this was
we've seen them get their ass kicked.
And we've seen them get their ass kicked, yeah. But, I think, if I'm not mistaken, again, I think this OKC game was the first type of win that we hadn't seen so far in this, you know, in this the beginning of the season.
Yeah, and I think one of the things to look at, too, like just talking about like the Celtics' dominance is two of their losses went to overtime. You lose to the Cavs, which one was not great. The other one was really, really close. Yeah. I mean, you're looking at like pure dominance. And it sort of reminds me, I was just thinking like the 2009 Celtics when they went on their run, and that was like unheard of when they lost two games in like the first half.
It was like 19-3 or something like that. Yeah.
Like right now we're sitting here feeling very good about the Celtics. And I mean, who knows? Are they the type of team that can crank off 15, 16 games in a row? I mean, I honestly can't look at it outside of health and like how they're
going to. I think that's the only thing, yeah, because obviously the Malcolm Brogdon, obviously there's the, you know, resting Al Horford the second night of back to backs, and no Jalen sort of had some things laying around. Yeah, no Rob. So, yeah, it might be tough. But at the same time, man, these guys have been stepping up in other people's absences, right? Whether it's Peyton Pritchard or whether it's Sam Hauser, you know, who's at this point, he's on opposing teams' scouting report. You see this now, the last couple of games, like he's covered. You know, I'm not saying this is the end, but it's gonna take him a bit to sort of ease through this transition where you have to just know that teams are hit. You know, they know about you. You're not the secret weapon anymore.
Which I think part of the
progression, I guess.
They don't rely on him. They just don't rely on him. Like, you know what I mean? Like,
if he's right, which is what you don't want to happen, like you.
Sean. If he's open, great. You don't want that to happen. If it's not, like, he can just move around and spread the floor. That's perfectly fine for this offense to work. You know, the other thing that I'm looking at, too, is do you guys feel like potentially like the ascendance of Jason Tatum into this MVP conversation, into, you know, clearly being the number one on the team? Even though he's been that way in my eyes for the past like 3-4 years, like, do you feel like Jaylen Brown is going to be in a position to just sort of sit there and just do what it takes to win the entire year? Or do you feel like that, you know, not that there's going to be friction about it, but like, do you feel like there's a little bit of like, you know, jealousy, or just like, yo, if they gave me this opportunity, I'd be able to do the same thing type thing with Jaylen Brown? Or how would that potentially affect the Celtics going on a run? Because I look at it and there are games where, you notice Jaylen Brown has it for like 10 minutes total and he's balling out. But then the rest of the game, mixed with the depth and mixed with Tatum just taking over, it's no longer like this AB party that two people are invited to and that's it.
Yeah, but he's also finding ways to contribute other than scoring. Like, his assists are up, his rebounds are up. He's, you know, making steals. Like, I think it's at the point now, in my opinion, that if one's not scoring, or if anybody's just having a bad night in terms of offensively, like, they'll find other ways to contribute. And it's a team mentality. Like, if Jason Tatum has started off like this, like a couple years back, I don't know how long this would have lasted in terms of like the beginning of the season, and how many of those games would have actually have been wins, because even when he's not shooting well, he's still being aggressive, taking it to the rack. Jaylen Brown is there, you know, he's finding other players that are open for open shots or whatever. And I don't know. I just, it's a team. This, even though it's Jason Tatum doing his thing, but it's like it's still the team concept, the team, the chemistry of the team is like it's pretty like fun to watch.
Yeah, no, I would agree. I mean, I'm just throwing it out there as potentially something to watch out for. Because we've known the friction that they've said that they look like they've had, but said they didn't have in years past. But they're winning right now, and I do feel like if they're winning and Jalen's playing better than he did last year, he's going to be an all-star, like, hands down this year. So maybe he is okay with this role, but I don't know. Just one thing. I'm just trying to figure out, like, how is this going to go off the rails? Because I always have that in the back of my mind. I'm just potentially, like, this is going to go sideways, but right now, there's very little to look at. Even
the thing is health. I think right now, at this point, it's just health.
Yeah, I agree. But even when they're not healthy, Tatum's putting up 43 points and being the Pistons single-handedly. It's wild. Like it's something we've never seen before.
Joe Zill has done a good job of making sure that Jaylen Brown is in the mix. I thought at the end of the third quarter, what was it, last Friday night, I feel like he tried to get him a play after a timeout, and it worked. And then even after the play, after the third quarter ended, they had like a little sidebar and it was like a back and forth. And again, I don't want to speculate whether they were arguing or anything, but I didn't get that vibe, right?
Yeah.
But it just seemed like a heated, what's the word I'm looking for? Just kind of like a
passionate,
a back and forth. A what?
Passionate.
Yeah, something like that. Right. They're going back and forth. And I think the reason why Mazzulla is doing that, because I think, from his point of view, last season there were times where it just seemed like he would check out. You know, I'm not saying this was like intentional. I'm not saying that he was just like, "Oh, I'm not getting the ball, so I'm not going to do anything." Kind of like what Joel said, like whether it was getting more rebounds or trying to get, like, he was just sort of had these like first, second quarters where he was like go off for like 20, but then he finished the game with like 27 or something. Whereas Tatum is not like that. Tatum is like he's going to keep a tag, he's going to keep going, and I felt like Jalen was sort of step to the side a bit, right? If you saw that the offense was clicking without him.
Yeah.
And I think Mazzulla understands how important it is for him to constantly be engaged, because that's just going to make this team that much stronger. It's going to make the offense much more stronger. And when you have other guys that can step up and score now or more comfortable to come up big in that role, whether it's Marcus Smart, whether it's Al Horford, whether it's Derek White, you know, 17, 19, 20 points, if they're failing it, they're not going to shy or back down. I think Mazzulla understands that it's important for Jalen not to do the same, regardless of what he's going through, because he's that good. He's that talented. That he could easily get hot when no one expects it, or when he's been quiet for a quarter. Like, that's how talented he is. That's how his offense typically works. So I think Mazzulla's doing a really good job of making sure that he doesn't see that kind of bad habit from Jalen that he may have noticed last year from his vantage point, you know. Being the head coach, which I think kind of gives you a unique perspective, kind of gives you a more personal perspective sometimes. And I think Joe Mazzulla kind of strikes me as that guy, because he just has sort of that relationship with a handful of players, you know, stemming back from last season.
Yeah, I mean, he's been here, what, 3-4 years, right? The longest tenure, you know, on the staff. So he's
3 years, right? He's, yeah. 2019, Brad's last season.
Okay, all right. Yeah, so the bubble season, right? If I'm not mistaken, 2019 to 2020.
Yeah, which is weird when you put it that way, because it's just like, it feels like two completely different seasons.
Exactly. So it was like the
season that never ends.
Yeah, so he's like 2 years, two seasons with Brad, and then, you know, last year, right? Essentially. So
yeah.
I feel like when it comes to Smart, I know, right? the name who we should not speak of. When it comes to Smart, Tatum, and Brown, right? Those three guys, Joe's three core guys, right? He understands that though, like, it's not about like making those or keeping short or making sure that those guys are happy or they are, you know, content with, you know, the shots or the many plays that are drawn up for them. I think he's putting it on those three as to like, this is not going to work without one of you guys, you know, not contributing in some sort of way. Like, you guys are an important piece. Not one person's not more important than the other. And that's like, it's infectious throughout because every game, there's always that third or fourth player that, like, it's a role player that comes up big whether it's like down the stretch or throughout the game. And one of those three guys that I mentioned are always bigging up those guys, right? They're always bigging up either a Sam Hauser, they're bigging up a Derek White. even Payne Pritchard. So it's a puzzle, right? At the end of the day. And one's not, they're not gonna get to where they want to get to without one piece.
Well, I think it's interesting you're giving the credit to Mazzulla on that, because you may be right, but I always feel like Tatum, when in the past where things went wrong for the Celtics, if Tatum didn't have it, and even look at the NBA Finals, Tatum didn't have it, Brown would try to do way too much, way over his head, and he'd be turning the ball over, he'd be, you know, getting out of control, he'd be doing a lot of those things that we always looked at Brown and being like, damn, why can't you just eliminate that from your game? But you know what? And maybe Mazzulla has gotten Jaylen Brown to trust his surrounding people, where now he's not the one like, oh, Tatum don't have it tonight, I got to put up 40. He's like, if Tatum doesn't have it, I'm just going to play within my offense, do what I can, and then pass the ball and not do too much. Because there was a spell in that OKC.
So mature.
In the third quarter where, I don't remember this, because Tatum was playing god-awful. I mean, he couldn't hit a three-pointer if his life depended on him. And it was like, when they went down by 15, it was like Brown was doing the NBA Finals shit where he was dribbling off his foot, making bad turnovers, offensive foul here. Then you're like, what the fuck just happened? But you hadn't seen that all year, and then he sort of got out of it. And it's like, no, now he's able to get into the offense. He's moving the ball. He's not trying to do too much knowing he can get his 27 points a night just by doing what he does well, even if Tatum doesn't have it. And now they have depth, so they can, like, win. They can stay in games. They can get Marcus involved. They can get the 10 points from – or the 20 points from Hauser, Pritchard, and White to be able to keep them in a game now, right? It's like, so maybe that's Mazzulla preaching that. Maybe that's the offensive structure. Maybe that's Jaylen Brown's growth. Whatever it is, it's evident, and it's probably the key of why this team – can be deep now is because the whole team's buying into it.
Yeah, it's led to this 7-game winning streak, man, which is incredible. I'm impressed, obviously. I mean, I had them picking up two L's last week, you know. Two good teams. Two good teams, all right, Sean.
You should apologize. And what I tell you about the Nuggets coming into the Garden on Friday.
That Denver game, they just dominated.
I agree.
They just, like, and listen, Michael Malone was saying all the right things pregame. He was spitting out stats. He was talking about tendencies. He was talking about Hauser. I was like, okay, this guy, he did his homework. Like, this guy's been studying. And they could not slow them down. And they could not slow that offense down, even if they wanted to. Like, Malone knew what he was getting himself into. He knew the vulnerable, or quote-unquote, seemingly vulnerable points for the, you know, that they could take advantage of, and it just didn't work. It did not work, and the Celtics' offense was the reason why I felt like, I don't want to say they checked out, but it was almost like they started doing like that, like, frustration fouls, and they started doing like those, like, petty, like, stupid fouls. I was like, wait a minute, oh, they're mad, they're pissed. Like, the Celtics have gotten under their skin at this point.
Yo, they were
just checked out, and I was just like, this thing is done.
They looked winded from the, like, beginning of the of like the.
Oh, that too.
The second quarter, right? And, like, even when they got within two, they just looked like they looked defeated. And the Celtics were like, nope. Like, there's a couple of teams out there that I feel like the Celtics, and granted, they only play Denver twice a year, but there's something about Denver that the Celtics just know how to handle Denver, even though they have, you know, the two-time reigning MVP and Jokic. But there's no fear when it comes to the Denver Nuggets in the Celtics' eyes. But there's a couple other teams out there, that the Celtics are like, no, we know how to play against this team, no matter what. And Denver's one of them.
Yeah.
Agreed.
Yeah, sure. Is Portland one of them? I feel like they always had a good game in Portland. One of those West Coast teams. But anyways, how long does the streak go? Does it continue through next week? Does it continue to next episode? I don't know. Let's find out. Let's look ahead.
All right.
Let's check in with Sean Dutcher.
I think we're ready to look ahead a little bit, It's a big game, actually, tonight. Tonight, big game.
It is on tonight, that's right.
Celtics are traveling to the land of the...
peaches.
Booty! Atlanta.
Sway's on location, too. We didn't forget to mention that. He's down in Hot Atlanta, yo.
Oh, you're talking about the particular establishment? Is that what you're thinking
of? Nah, they call it the city of Atlanta, don't they? Hot Atlanta?
Where I'm guessing that
Marcus... No, no, not you, Sean. Oh. Earlier, when you were getting, like, when I guessed Peach, I don't think he was going to say Peach.
Yeah, no. I'm talking about the great Coca-Cola factory they have down there. The
Bicentennial Park. No, what is it? What park is it?
The Atlantic, Olympic Village, whatever that is.
That's right. They still got those up there. They got the logo. Yeah.
Atlanta is a great place if you're trying to look for very, historical establishments, and also, the fans down there, they're feeling their Atlanta Hawks right now. The Atlanta Hawks are sitting only, I think, one game behind the Boston Celtics right now. Two games behind the Boston Celtics in the standings. But 9-5, they've had a great start to the season. They got DeJounte Murray, who's playing really well. They've got Trae Young, who's dabbling in being, being able to take a step back. He's got more help this year. John Collins is playing well. They also have those role players that have always been stepping up for them in the past few years. So the team is solid, but let me ask you, outside of this game, does anyone really believe in the Hawks this year as a Eastern Conference contender, or are they sort of just like...
I felt like you did when in the beginning of the season.
I thought that they're gonna be in the hunt, like,
or after that trade went down, you were like, oh, right. Hawks are, yeah.
Well, like the Bulls were last year, right? The Bulls and the Hawks to me are identical teams. They're gonna be in the top four, top five. That's the 4-5 seed in the Eastern Conference this year. Is the Bulls Hawks, right? Do you think that whoever's gonna win that matchup is gonna be able to make a run? I don't necessarily know. That's what I'm asking you. Do you feel like the Hawks did enough to surpass the Bulls? Get into that, Heat, Celtics, Bucks, even Raptors, Nets, potential, could have potential to make a run in the playoffs. I don't know. What do you feel about the Hawks?
There might be, it's probably a year, still a year behind. We're talking about this core, or two. I mean, it doesn't seem like they're going to – it looks like this is it, right? This is their team moving forward. So I think it takes them a couple of years. I think the Eastern Conference has improved. And it's just – they're in a tough spot right now. But obviously, where these guys are in their career, I mean, this is ideal. Mid-20s, mid to late 20s, a lot of these guys, especially the starting lineup, plenty of upside. So,
no, I think you hit on the head there. I think the starting lineup is legit, but they just – to get DeJounte Murray, they had to trade away some pieces. I don't think they have enough to, and they lost Herter.
Yeah, which really surprised me, by the way. But then I guess they're going for it, right? I guess they believe in this backcourt, and obviously right now it's they look good. But yeah, when they made the deal initially, I was like, But then again, I was thinking, let's see what happens. I'm a fan of both these guys, both those guards. So I think the next couple of years they're gonna have to see that through and try to round out the rest of the roster, but they're definitely on to something with the starting five, though, for sure.
Yeah, so their whole thing is you got, Trey, Deontay, Collins, and then DeAndre Hunter. I think they got something in DeAndre Hunter. He's a good player. Clint Capella's obviously a big center, but then after that, man, there is nothing on that team. So they remind me of where the Celtics were about 2 years ago, where the starting five was okay, but they had literally nothing else. So I don't know. I think they it'd be a stretch to see them win 50 games this year, but we'll see what happens with that. And then
the Hawks podcast is going on, bro.
No, I just think that the Hawks are like this interesting team. They're number three in the Eastern Conference right now, which could be interesting. Talking about teams,
I don't know if that's sustainable.
No, I know. My whole thing was like, I could sense that you're ready to transition to the next game, so I just busted both.
Ah, there you go. I had to just throw a nutsack tap in there, huh?
Yeah, that's a lot of time on the Hawks, but I guess you're just about up.
The old sack tap. Anyways, talking about teams that probably have no aspirations of actually making a run in the playoffs, but are playing very well right now, it's the New Orleans Pelicans. So the Pelicans.
Pelicans.
They've been playing really solid basketball. They have a little bit of a reignited sort of squad down there. Willie Green's doing some business. But Zion plays every other night, which I think means he won't play versus the Celtics unless they rest him again. But I don't know. That team's a little bit of an enigma too.
Yeah, it's going to be a back to back for them. So it's the second night he didn't play the first night. So if he doesn't play the second night, well, that's just weird.
Yeah. Unless they save him for that game, even if he doesn't play, the Pelicans now have my least favorite player in the league.
I don't know why you're shitting on him, man. You're all about him when he was playing against the Suns in the playoffs.
That was cute. Totally. I don't like him no more. Alvarado.
Zion? You don't like Alvarado?
I thought it was cute last year. Now this year he's like a focal point of the team.
Because he's popular now. People like him. He's a fan.
That dude cannot shoot, and Marcus Smart is going to eat his. You know what? For lunch, dude. Like I say, he's gonna be all up in that thing. That ain't gonna be a problem.
Yeah. I realized how much the crowd, how much the fans really appreciated him last season when I went to. I was at that game last year. And ever since then, it's sort of. I'm not gonna say transcend across the league, but more and more, you start to see him pop into NBA TV highlights and whatnot, and just making he's just kind of like that guy, sort of like the Marcus Smart of.
Alvarado,
yeah, but
kind of like a Marcus Smart on a backup in a backup role for the Pelicans.
Don't say that. That's ridiculous. He doesn't play an ounce of defense. He does stupid little gimmick plays. He's a gimmick player. He's like when the
how popular he is.
Yeah,
you look at him as like the heart and soul.
He's a gimmick player,
and he doesn't play any defense. That's pretty much what he's known for, bro.
He's literally known for creeping in the backcourt when you least expect him to
make a steal. Have him D somebody.
That's defense.
That is a gimmick, and it's like basically when
Grand Theft Alvarado.
Remember when that Major League Baseball team put the little person in back in like the 30s, and the guy couldn't get a strike. They couldn't hit a strike zone. That's basically what Alvarado is. Basically, he's a gimmick.
On defense?
I think he's got good handles. He's got good handles, and he can drive and he can dish. But if they're going to make him a focal point of their second unit, he's going to get his – I mean, if somebody actually plays defense against the guy, he's nothing, absolutely nothing. I mean, eating alive. You think Isaiah Thomas was small. Talk about being small and you can't shoot. That's what Alvarado is. Alvarado was Isaiah Thomas if he couldn't shoot.
Out of all the people to talk about on this squad, you know, CJ McCollum.
For real.
A guy named, you know, Brandon Ingram. I don't know. There's a couple other guys you could have spoken about.
I think the Pelicans have a very good squad. I like Herb Jones. I like
Herb Jones, yeah.
Big Herb.
Big center guy. I think they got a solid squad. They got a starting lineup. If they just got a legitimate backup point guard instead of this little guy, I think they'd be in a really good spot.
This little guy.
Anyways. And then the Celtics travel. It's a three-game road trip. Three-game road trippy. Then they go to...
Shot City.
By the way, in between these two games, the World Cup starts. And then on Monday, the Celtics play the Chicago Bulls for the... Third time in the season?
Yeah, man. Third time, bro.
Yeah.
Got to make it 3-0.
They really want to just get out of the Bulls.
They can't make it 3-0 because they already lost once.
Yeah, 2-1 against the Bulls. So we'll see.
Yeah, 2-1 against the Bulls. We'll see. Meany corrects himself.
Yeah, they definitely beat them early.
They definitely did. And then...
They handed them the worst loss of the season.
How much is that, like, familiarity? Like, you know, you just play them early in the week and just be like, you know what, we got these guys, and they crushed them.
Yeah, they absolutely crushed them. Yeah, because the Celtics...
It was a fluke or not, I guess, on Monday night. We'll see.
Vucevic just took their lunch the first game and then do shit the second game. Okay, and then last game in this next...
Yeah, he always does that. Can he not grab 20 rebounds this time? Let's see if the Celtics can do it.
Yeah. Celtics...
Maybe 19.
Celtics go back home on the night before Thanksgiving, kid. Always a good night at the Garden. I feel like we always play at home this night. Celtics.
As they should.
Luka comes to Boston for the first time this year and the only time this year until the NBA Finals.
What the fuck?
Miss it, bro.
Come on, man.
Luka comes to Boston, and the past, has it been five buzzer beaters in a row for Luka to knock? I feel like it's been like five or six in a row, dude. It's been absolutely insane. So if there's one game scheduled,
I definitely was at the last game that that Dallas played in. There was no buzzer beater involved in that game. KG's retirement night.
Okay. Yes.
You know the game that you were supposed to go to.
Can we talk about how you got tickets to the Minnesota game because you thought?
No, it was the Brooklyn. It was the Brooklyn game, and it was a great game, and we beat them. And I remember talking shit.
Yeah, but why did you think they were going to retire his number on Brooklyn?
They got fucking shit on us this year. We couldn't even cut off. And the guy literally laughed in my face and walked away. He didn't even want to fight me. He just laughed in my face. And little they know, we swept them motherfuckers. So
what you got now? Now that your boy Luka's coming to town, are you going to still say, 4-0?
I'm going to say.
Yeah, it's a tough spot for you.
I'm going to say, by the grace of the pilgrims, finding by a whim. Celtics go 4-0. I think Luka knocks down a game winner with 0.7 left on the clock, and they leave enough time for Tatum to knock down a double game winner back in his face. And that's how they go 4-0. But they're definitely going 4-0.
Bang!
Yeah, Mike
Green always has like this, like, this Mike Green won't have enough time to finish movie his finish. Like.
Yeah, Mike Green doesn't have enough time to finish his first bang. And then Jeff Van Gundy's gonna be like, Luka Doncic always get, and then bang, Tatum hits the next one before he can finish that sentence. That's how it's gonna end. And then Mark Jackson's just gonna say, "Mama, there goes that man." And then broadcast over, and that's it.
No, he's gonna say something. He's gonna put the camera on Tatum's mom. He's gonna be like, "Mama, there goes Mama." It's gonna be like awkward.
Mama, pull that grandson. It's just Deuce running around, dude. Actually, fun fact about this last game too. Going to be a big Hauser night. Did you know that Sam Hauser's great, great, great grandfather actually came over on the Mayflower?
I did not know that.
Yep. Mm-hmm. Samuel Hauser the first.
Oh, okay. So his great grandfather, what, only like four times removed?
I said five greats, right?
Yeah. So still.
So. Samuel Hauser.
So the late,
he was born in 1902.
I know, right? So the late 1800s, early 1900s, is what we're talking about?
No, Sam Hauser's dad. Sam Hauser's dad was born in like...
This dude definitely lived through the Titanic, so you fucked up.
No, Sam... Maybe it's more greats than I know, but he came over on Hauser. There was a Samuel
First of all, Hauser. Hold on. First of all, let's start out with this question. When do you think Plymouth Rock was, was discovered?
1620.
All right.
Also,
I thought you were gonna go further back and we'll be like, that's the worst trial
you had. No. Let me ask you this. If I
see about 300
you
years
at the same semester? Yeah, did you learn at the same term in fucking social studies, you asshole?
Let me just ask you this.
300 years off, but okay.
I only know the year of the Plymouth Rock because Jordan just went there with my grandparents and he brought back a fake rock that says 1620 or whatever the fuck he said on it. So
even worse, you knew exactly the year.
Secondly, more importantly, let's hypothetically say I brought in a Mayflower expert from Plymouth, okay? And they had the manifest of the Mayflower. Let me just throw this out there. Would you bet on a Samuel Hauser to be on that boat? Or would you say that Samuel Hauser wouldn't be on that boat? Is Samuel Hauser not the most pilgrim name of all time? Or would you bet against that?
I would bet against it.
You can't bet against it because Samuel Hauser was definitely on the Mayflower.
All right, give me the lines on that, and then I'll get back to you.
All right. Well, let me look at the manifest first, and then we'll see what happens.
For the second week in a row, I'm going to say 3-1.
What game are they losing?
The Hawks.
That's bullshit. Okay.
It's going to be a close one, though. It's not going to be a blowout.
It's That's the biggest lie.
They're going to win 10 in a row, and then the Mavs game is going to be the questionable one, I think. But
no, cause the reason why I said the Hawks, because it's like, all right, you get that, you break that streak, and it's like, all right, let's start a new one. Let's get them motivated to get that new one, you know?
No, I think this one, they're going to stretch this one out for next week.
Nice.
I'm going 4-0.
Uh-huh. 4-0, baby. Right, 4-0, cool. Baby. The same house is special.
The same house is special. Okay.
Same house is special. House is special. Thanks, here.
Listen, the way they looked against the Nuggets.
How's it, dude?
Little suspect against OKC, but they did what they needed to do in time. I'm liking the mindset right now, the headspace. It's crystal clear. It looks focused. It's good.
Yeah, Celtics riding the longest winning streak of active winning streak right now. Number one team in the league, only lost two games away from home. I mean, they're going to go on this road trip, this little mini road trip, which they don't have to travel too far. They stay in the central time zone, and they're gonna make some noise. They're gonna keep this thing going, man. It's got to be 4-0.
All right.
I don't think the Hawks are ready.
That's a good reason. Okay.
Well done, Sean. Well done. You're adding more to the segment. I like that. Good job.
Especially that Pilgrim talk. Huh? Great. Great lesson.
I'm a little crazy about that part, but for being honest.
Full disclosure.
No, nothing. All right. Well, let's wrap up this episode of Causeway Street. The same way we wrap up every single episode here on Causeway Street, where we take our trip around the NBA with Joel's In Case You Missed It.
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 No rebuttal? No? All right. Okay. I'm going to keep it moving here. He's going to do some more research and then come back with some crazy stat.
I've got the list up, and it's not looking good.
The quiet
is scary. Yeah. He's up to something. The wheels were turning.
Now, there is a John Goodman. So maybe you talk to your voice, right?
Yeah, okay.
Hey, Joel, what are we missing?
All right. It's that time of the episode, guys, when I give you your Kyrie update. All right. Kyrie misses his 7th game, and there's no indication that he's coming back anytime soon, even though he's met with Adam Silver. And he's met with...
Yeah, what's going on?
The Nets owners here. Chicken. I mean, to the point where, Jalen Brown is like, yo...
Stalemate.
Like, even Jalen Brown is like, yo, it's time for a, quote, larger conversation about Kyrie's suspension. So, it's remains to be seen when he's going to return.
Brooklyn's really fumbling this one.
Did you like Dave Chappelle's stand-up?
Sure did.
Yeah, I love that shit.
This shit was great.
Yeah, it was funny.
Shit was fucking great.
It was funny. I do think that there is a little bit of a point of, like, the Jalen Brown thing and, like, the fact that this is, like, unprecedented. But, you know, and I get it. It's unprecedented, and like it's potentially because no one's ever said something like this against minority group, coming from a minority group that has been oppressed and all these things, right? So it's like a different situation.
Yeah.
But I sort of feel at the same time like if he's sort of getting a little, and you correct me if I'm wrong, like maybe getting a little bit of the benefit of the doubt to be like, instead of just saying like you're suspended for 25 games for saying this, like, hey, we'll suspend you for at least 5, but you got to do these things. Like the weird thing is the manipulation of the league trying to make him do things to get out of his suspension. But I feel like that's their way of saying, like, we don't want to suspend you for how long we were going to suspend.
But that, no, but it's funny you say that, but it's not the league, though. It's the team. You remember, Joe Tsai was the one that brought this to light.
Yeah.
By tweeting out, essentially throwing this dude, you know, under the bus saying, yo, what the hell is this? Like, imagine any other team owner doing that.
No, it's weird. It's right. Weird. Very strange.
Look, I'm with you on that. And my whole thing going into this is that I figured that they would eliminate, I don't know, 3 out of the 6 or whatever the case would be.
Yeah.
Not trying to meet halfway with Kyrie, but just to be realistic, because Jalen has a point. We were talking about the player association, that there's no rule that tells them how they need to conduct themselves on social media, nor did he say anything. I mean, outside of the, you know, featuring that documentary on his platform, you know, but they have to figure out what that means. They have to figure out, you know, where do you draw the line and just have a conversation with them. But I feel like this whole stalemate, it's not doing anyone any favors, especially not for the Brooklyn Nets. Like it doesn't make any sense.
The slippery slope for me.
Either let him go or make your decision to invite him back. Like, it's that simple at this point. You know, 7 games now, it's just, like, this is getting ridiculous. It's starting to make the Brooklyn Nets organization look worse in my eyes. Like, I don't know everyone else.
Well, this is why.
I'm looking at it as, like, you guys have to get your shit together, kind of make a decision here, or just sort of make a tough call. And I feel like they're leading it into Kyrie's hands. Like, that's not going to get anything done.
With the Slippers, if they were really against this, they would have just said, Kyrie is suspended for 10 games, it's uncalled for. And then whether he did anything to make up for it or not, he comes back.
But that would have been easy.
Or you let him go.
No, but that would have been a cop out. You know why? Because it's like you're going to be suspended for 10 games, and before these 10 games are done, you got to do these things. And you know it's going to be a fucking game of chicken. Like, should I really do these things, or you know, is this for real? So by them saying you're going to be suspended for no less than 5 games, and if you don't get these things done, guess what? The game's going to keep piling up and piling up and piling up. So the ball is essentially in his court, right? No pun intended. Otherwise, like the reports that the Nets, you know, essentially don't want him to come back, or they think he's not going to complete this, then that becomes a true statement, right?
Yeah, but you're missing a point. The whole point is not the fact that he did something wrong. It's the fact that they're saying an indefinite suspension unless you do these things, which has never happened before.
NBA. You're right. And, you know, but that's why it's Brooklyn. It's not the NBA.
I'm saying you can't now do this for domestic violence. If domestic violence happens, then now all of a sudden are you going to say, hey, that fuck you, dude. You have to
go get counseling.
And do all these things till you come back, and we're not doing anything till you come back. And then now they're getting this, like, it's more of like a power struggle versus just, if you think it's wrong, suspend him for an amount of time, fine him for an amount of money, and then move on. Versus now you're setting a precedent of like, we can control whatever you do. We can actually suspend you forever until you get.
All you have to do is fuck up one time.
Yeah, but no, I get what you're saying.
And the fuck up doesn't even have to be in the rule book.
I get what you're saying, but he had multiple opportunities to apologize, and he didn't do that. So it's like, you're not going to apologize? All right. Then now this is going to be our next course of action. And that's where they're at right now, because it's an unprecedented thing. I get that, what you're saying, Sean. But, I mean, look at where the Celtics are at, too, in their situation with Ime. Also an unprecedented thing.
That's never happened before.
So for those keeping track.
No, I'm not trying to be funny. Not because of the Ime thing, but I mean, like, a team suspending their coach for a year, like that's never happened before.
Never happened.
I'm
exactly.
Not saying what Ime did.
No, I got you. No, I know. I know.
I don't want people screaming at the podcast being like, "This happened in organizations all the time."
No, I know. Okay, I know. We're talking about the consequence. Yeah, that's what we're talking about.
We might be on something there, but yeah, the consequence is what we're talking about.
Yeah.
The punishment that was handed down.
So the punishment with the Ime thing was no more, at least a year. That's the whole thing.
Yeah, but no coach has ever been suspended for a year for anything in the NBA.
Right, but what I'm saying is, like, it's not...
You either get canned or you go. Or no one finds out about it.
It's not the fact that it's like, oh, you're suspended for a year, right? It's basically now it's turning into this whole thing of, like, you're suspended until we feel like you've atoned for your misgivings, which is like...
Right.
Which is...
But also, too, everyone has to remember that this isn't... It isn't just because of what he did. It's because of his history, right? That plays a part into this. If Kyrie was scot-free and never been in any sort of controversy, never said anything to get himself out, there was no vaccine controversy going on, I don't know if this thing's handled the same way. I'm not sure. I just think it's almost like this is the Brooklyn Nets at its boiling point with Kyrie. And it's just like not playing out well in their eyes. I mean, it's not playing out... And it's not playing out well in the eyes of the public, because it's just like, well, wait a minute here. You said all these crazy, you know, rules that Kyrie has to oblige, has to follow, or has to do whatever, this checklist. And if he doesn't do it, like, how long are you going to hold him hostage, so to speak?
Well, it's sort of turning into this, like, okay. And I think where Jaylen Brown was coming from is like, wait a minute, hold on. suspend him for a set amount of games if you think it's wrong. If you want to suspend him for the whole season, do it, and everyone could be pissed about it, right? Or you can, like, make up this, like, this indefinite type of suspension is not a good precedent to set. And I think that's where the Players Association are coming in and saying, hold on a minute. Like, agrees with what Kyrie's doing, but at the same time.
Yeah, and then you got Joe Tsai saying, like, oh, Kyrie has a lot of work to do. It's like, whoa. Like,
what, yeah, so that's
like, it's almost like, hey, son, go stay in the corner. You're in punishment. It's just like, that's not the dynamic here. That's not professional.
Yeah, that's why there's a lot of things that play into it. And look at the team. What are they, you know, 5-5 or whatever since Vaughn took over? And it's more like, I'm not basing this on anything that I've, you know, seen or I've heard or whatever, but, you know, what if he doesn't complete this whatever checklist in a certain amount of time, and then the Nets go on like a little run? Then what?
No, it's like, they're definitely not going on a run last night when they got blown out by the
No, I know. I'm just saying in general, like,
he'll be on limited restrictions, bro.
Right? Yeah, I just feel like I'm not until
he completes that last mission, I guess, or whatever the heck you want.
Yeah.
To well, for those keeping track, right? He got suspended on November 3rd.
You haven't donated yet, Kyrie. 15 minute restriction.
He got suspended initially on November 3rd for what the team is calling harmful impact of his conduct relating to, you know, the social media posts that. It's been seen all over the place. It's funny because Thanksgiving is right around the corner, and I don't think he's coming back before Thanksgiving. We all know how he feels about Thanksgiving. Yep. So,
fuck Thanksgiving.
As he's carrying,
it. Yeah, I knew you were gonna say that. As he's carrying his like his turkey dish.
I'm telling you, man. I just think.
Like, yo, this is pizza, bro. Like,
yo, let me get some more gravy on that real quick.
Yeah, right.
Yeah, I don't know, man. I think that suspend him if you're going to suspend him, and it is what it is. Obviously, there's a moment when he comes back, he's going to have to face the media again, and if he says something else, you suspend him again, right? Just but like this checklist, that's unprecedented and doesn't make a lot of sense to me, yeah. To be honest.
We're living in unprecedented times, my man. All right, in case you missed it, guess what city could potentially have an NBA franchise?
Vegas.
Honolulu.
No. Good guesses. Not Seattle either.
Honolulu. Honolulu is not a good guess.
Well, he said Vegas, so it's, you know, Honolulu, that's not that far off, right? At least compared to what I'm about to say. Mexico City. Like, could you see an NBA franchise in Mexico City?
Why is the NBA obsessed with Mexico City? Like, just let this one go, NBA. Jesus. Like, are we back here again?
Listen.
Like, remember, like, was it 7 years ago or so? Like, they were, like, obsessed with, like, they had the preseason games there.
No,
like,
no. Every year they do
it. Like, why are you selling this to us so badly? Like, all
right, I'm about to tell you why. Because every season. Yeah, every season for the last, like, you know, 4 or 5 years, they get a game there. It's, you know, NBA in Mexico, and they have a G League team down there. If you let me finish.
They got a G League team there.
it's called the Mexico City Capitans. That's going to be essentially like the. It's according to Mark Spears, right? No, I'm serious. According to Mark Spears.
Wait, who's the G League affiliate?
Well.
Oh wait, they have one already.
They have one already. They have one already. Like, this is a G League team. G League team called the Mexican City Capitans, and that's essentially, according to Mark Spears, going to be the road to the expansion for the NBA, because there's already something established there from the NBA already.
Okay, if Mexico City gets one before Vegas and Seattle gets one again, then they got problems. Like, that's not a good look. Like,
well, it's a legit Especially contender. Seattle. It's a legit contender.
I don't know about the Vegas thing, but the Seattle thing, man, like, those fans are starting to cheat, man.
Yeah, I think, though, Vegas is, like, the biggest, like, they see what's going on with the Raiders, and, you know, the Raiders suck, but, I mean, it's still a destiny.
Yeah, it's like a trend. Right.
And, you know,
Money Mayweather told me, man, Money Mayweather said there's going to be a team out there.
Yeah, I think so. I do think so, but I just think that there is this infatuation with Mexico City. Hey, if you want to put a team in Mexico City, I mean, okay, but I mean, think about just the way the soccer teams go to Mexico and they can't breathe there. It's in, you know, it's different climate. It's a different altitude, all that stuff. Like, that's, and then who's going to want, like, let me put it this way. Who the hell is going to want to move to Mexico City and raise their family and raise like
with like the drug cartel like down the street and shit from where they live? Yeah. they're gonna have like their property around where all the narcos live. It's like, mm-hmm. Oh, hey, welcome to the neighborhood.
Yeah,
Jerome, is it?
I'm gonna call you Juan. All right, that's
cool. I just thought you re-up for
nah, yo, it's Jerome, bro.
Be up for $140 million, huh? Yep, cool. Nah, no, you're cool in our book, yeah.
I just read in you signed a new contract.
So yeah, that's
I don't know.
NBA just
loves themselves in Mexico City.
Yeah, man, but, it's like the NFL trying to have a team in like in London. Like that's not gonna work. I don't know. Like, it's just this whole like I don't know.
Hey, NBA's not that far from that either, man. They've played with that idea.
It certainly could work in Europe.
And Adam Silver talked about the, you know, the Champions League style, what do you call it, like groups and
yeah,
mid-season tournaments. I think all that stuff doesn't matter. It's just a matter of when at this point. But the whole expansion thing.
Relegation?
I just don't know how it would work in terms of like, you know, what is it going to be like, you pick the best teams in the NBA going up against like the best teams in the EuroLeague or something? Like, how is that going to work? And what you, is it going to be point based? So our teams are going to be able to put that towards the regular season. Like, I don't know. I guess I see.
When are they going to bring back the actual like world championship game where it's the NBA finals champion against, you know, Europe's champion, and then it'll actually be a world champion, like a legit world champion.
Well, I always think bad messed up.
I think that's what they have in mind.
I think it's messed up that the fact that whatever crummy town in Massachusetts can make it to the Little League World Series and then go up against literally the rest of the world, the rest of the world, and only play them in the finals. Like, that is so messed up, dude. It's like, yo, you think that Swampscott, Massachusetts is going to beat a team from
Japan?
The top five teams in Japan? No, they will fucking them. But they only play in the last game. Like, there's no Swampscott's playing like, you know, Harrisburg, Pennsylvania in the Little League World Series Championship. Meanwhile, Japan, the best team in the entire country of Japan, had to go through the best team against South Korea, the best team in China, only to get to face Curacao or Colombia. And have to
so go. Some of these guys are going to be playing. They're going to be freaking pitching in the majors in like 7 years.
Like, can we just stop with this? If you, it's very hard to include the international market. I get that. So just stop trying. That's my thing. Like, just stop.
That's my thing.
Right. Just make it a North. If you want to make it North American, maybe expand a couple teams into Canada. Expand a couple teams into Mexico. Like, okay, maybe
we so I was like, keep it in the continent, would you?
Yeah, like already got it. Like, and you saw what type of issues the whole Toronto thing happened with the COVID thing last year. It was actually two of our top 10 players can't play in half of the games in this final in this playoff series. It's just a very, very not thought through thing that is being forced on them. But I don't know. Anyways.
All right, and last but not least, this story here came out, I want to say like two episodes ago, but because of the whole Kyrie thing, and you know, that's been kind of like dominating, in case you missed it, but I'm finally going to talk about it, and it's a very, very weird story, but bear with me here, okay? You guys remember Jamal Tinsley, right?
Yes, Indiana Pacers.
Yeah, of course, okay. During his tenure with the Indiana Pacers, apparently Tinsley paid upwards of $250,000 in fines. And you want to take a guess on what these fines were for? It's one particular thing.
Drug test.
No.
Late.
Nope. I'll give you one more guess. What, prostitutes? What? No. No. My man paid upwards of $250,000 in fines for not showering after practices and games.
That's strange.
All right. According to a former teammate of his, right, Bruno Sundorf, yeah, who is also a former Celtic, he said that he was on a recent podcast. So it wasn't. This is not coming from this quote I'm about to read. It's not from Tinsley, but it's from Bruno here saying he didn't want to get naked with the rest of his teammates. End quote. That was the reason why he refused to shower.
Go home and shower.
Yes, yes, he would go home and shower, but he didn't want to shower like in the locker room. And apparently, you know, players like Brad Miller and Jermaine O'Neal and Reggie Miller were like, "Yo, like we gotta like we gotta set a precedent here. He has to shower here with the rest of us."
Do you think it was a Wang situation?
I don't know. I just thought this was the weirdest thing to like to get fined over. You know what I mean?
Yeah, man. Because I mean, even the fact that they were fining him for that. Like who drew the line in the sentence?
Yeah, players like Reggie Miller at the time were just like, "Yo, we gotta like change the code of conduct here or something, where he's gotta like shower with the rest of us."
Oh, they were against it? Wow,
they were against it. Yeah,
my immediate thought was, do you think that Jamal Tinsley was embarrassed about his wang?
He must have felt comfortable with something. I don't know if that was that, but maybe he just had some sort of thing about being in a room full of naked dudes.
Yeah, I mean, a lot of Pacers players were just, they kept noticing. They're like, "Yo, why is this dude never like shower? He just bounces after games and practices." And they decided they wanted to penalize him after every time he refused to shower. And he didn't budge. So he just kept paying the fines. You know, according to Sundorf, quote, "Tinsley wouldn't shower after practice or games. We easily enter or exit the shower, and he would be dressed already exiting the locker room. Once, twice, three times, and Reggie Miller says to the team manager, bring the team rule book. We have to add one change that every player must shower after every training session, especially after every game. Otherwise, he'll be punished. So the first fine was $500, and it would be doubled every other time he didn't take a shower," end quote. So, you know, wasn't feeling comfortable, and he didn't mind paying the fine, and It is what it is. It's just weird. I don't know. This is a weird thing to get fined over, I think, in my opinion. But I guess it was more so Reggie Miller who implemented the new rule. So.
I'll see Chris in his locker room.
Come on, Jamal. You're a big part of this team.
Yeah. So.
You can't be the starting point guard of this team and not get naked with us.
Yeah, I think that's the question I want to ask. Like, why did Reggie care so much? Not that. Why did Jamal not want to do it?
Say
like
we play as a team, we win or lose as a team, and we shower as a team. God damn it!
Jeez. Do you think that he smelled really bad? Like that could be it. Like they were really concerned about his hygiene.
I don't know. He was just like I'm just gonna go home and shower. Like this is what I do. I go home. You know, I
got my girlfriend. That could have been it too, Sean. Maybe he just wasn't doing it enough, and it was like a bullshit excuse. And they were like, "Yo, let's just." If we find him, he'll have to shower, so he won't stink anymore.
I feel like that. He never really liked Jamal Tinsley as their point guard, now that we think about it. Like,
I mean, he was there for 7 years.
But they always tried to bring in, like, a Travis Best.
Yeah, he was always like, there was someone else got hurt, he would take over.
Yeah, there was always somebody that was, like, trying to, like, come in and take his spot. Like, I really feel like they never appreciated Tinsley, man. He was a solid point guard. Maybe it's because he smelled like ass. Maybe that's what's it.
All right. That's going to do it for this edition of
There's something new every day.
I don't know, right? A vacation missed it.
Talk about things that I did not think that you would say when you said Jamal Tinsley. I mean, I was like, okay, first off, random player. Yeah. Up about him. And I was expecting like more insurance fraud or.
Look, I was like, you know.
Whenever you have a retired player out of the blue, someone that like just, you know, wasn't an all-star, but you remember, but you kind of like, that's the first thing crossed my mind. I'm like, what do you do? Like something came back to haunt him.
Yeah. Yeah. That's going to do it for this edition of In Case You Missed It. Follow us on all social media platforms at Causeway Street. Hit up causewaystreet.com for your Celtics news, rumors, and opinions. Subscribe to Causeway After Hours if you haven't already. That's at patreon.com/causeway. You're going to enjoy some exclusive content on there. The after
new
show
just came out. Got another one coming out this week.
After show podcast and also one-on-one with Sway podcast, plus automatically entered to one of our jersey giveaways. So, you know, sign up. Do yourself a favor. Subscribe.
Yeah, we're 1 month into the regular season, so we'll be picking a lucky winner soon.
Hell yeah. So
we just did a great World Cup preview earlier today that we're going to be posted on there, I'm sure.
Yeah, we're going to put that up there before the World Cup.
Which is this weekend. Crazy, huh?
Wild. Talk about the worst host city of a World Cup of all time.
Is it true that no one's drinking? Is that the thing? Are they going to pass that or what?
They have to limit the places where they can sell alcohol.
No, beer and alcohol is illegal in Qatar, whatever you want to call it. But there's 4 tents where you can drink. And you know that the police are going to be standing outside of there just waiting to arrest people just like left and right.
Right.
Should be interesting.
Yeah.
So hit up there. Go to Causeway After Hours. That's on Patreon. And I'd be remiss not to, you know, mention here, thoughts and prayers to the families of Lavelle Davis, Devin Chandler, and Deshaun Perry, the 3 young men who were killed at the UVA campus. Again, condolences to their families and the UVA team and community during this terrible time and this senseless tragedy. So our prayers are with them.
Yeah, terrible, terrible, terrible story. Absolutely. And Sim Hauser actually knew one of the victims. He talked about it briefly. Not in the scrum form that I know of, but he did speak about it. And it's just an awful, awful story. It's something I read. I was reading on my way to the game Monday. I had no idea until, what was that, probably 4:30 or so. I was making my way in.
Out slow. The details did come out slow.
Yeah, it came out slow. I read like probably 2 or 3 different articles that had, you know, each one had a new piece of information that I didn't know. And it's just awful, man. Terrible. Guys, just everyone take care of yourselves. I don't know. We don't know the details, so I don't want to say something that I might regret or whatever, but I don't know. Just take care. Everyone take care of yourselves. And yeah, condolences to those families and to everyone affected by this. Yeah.
Yeah, man. Take care of yourselves. And I got 2 things. Like, what happens in college is not going to affect you for the rest of your life. So,
seriously, man. That's a good way to put it, too.
Go. And then also, like, yo, get these guns out of here, bro. Like, I don't even want to know. My least favorite thing about these entire things is finding out about how easy it was for this person that obviously
Right. Or I'm sure you read in whichever article you read about it. He talked about it, but we never actually physically saw the gun. It's like, wait, what?
Yeah. How did he get a
gun? Talking about stuff like that, like willy nilly like that.
How did he get a gun? And who didn't like what? Jesus Christ! Just put some more things in these places to make it harder to get guns. I mean, it's common sense. It's common sense. But yeah. I guess we just gotta keep fighting for that.
No, definitely, and I'm just gonna piggyback what Sway said. Let's take care of ourselves out there, you know. You know, we got Thanksgiving right around the corner. You know, we got things to be thankful for, and
families, man.
Horrible tragedy.
Love one another because this world is just full of hate, and that's just got to change. So,
100%. And make sure you reach out to those people that you used to reach out to, man. I mean, that's a big thing, I think. You know, you never know what people are going through, so.
Yeah,
at least talking to
them,
you know?
Definitely. And on that note, we're going to take off here. And until next time, we are out.